On this episode of The Big Number, we dive into the stats to try and answer these questions. Are Jalen Brunson and Karl-Anthony Towns the best scoring duo in Knicks history? Are we concerned about the Knicks defense? And most importantly, are we powerful enough to single-handedly curse LeBron James? That and more coming up right now. I am Tom Haberstroh, and you're tuned in to this week's Big Number with Dan Devine, where we go deep in one big stat, one big trend, one big story in the NBA that you need to know about. What's up, Dan?
Tom, we're coming down off of Thanksgiving. We are barreling headfirst and headlong into the holiday season. There's so much to do and so much to see, but right now, I just need you to put up some numbers. So, Tom, hit me with it. What is our big number this week?
Yeah, I didn't get it back home into the New York tri-state area this week, so I'm actually going to go there right now with the New York Knicks, okay?
Concrete
this week's big number.
Made of, there's nothing you can do.
I'm going to let you play this out. Yeah,
it's okay. We're trying to move. I apologize.
This week's big number is a 10 out of 10. That rendition of Empire State of Mind was fantastic. Good job, Dan Devine. You did great. This week's big number is 50.3. That is the combined scoring average of the Knicks scoring duo of Jalen Brunson and Karl-Anthony Towns. Jalen Brunson, of course, scoring 25.2 points per game, and Karl-Anthony Towns is scoring 25.1. Combine them and you get this week's big number of 50.3. And you might be wondering at home, how often have we seen a duo, two guys on the same team, scoring 25 points per game? And the answer is just 30 times in NBA history.
Wow.
When you had two guys on the same team scoring 25 plus for their team, qualifying for the points per game leaderboard, of course. According to StatHead.com, there have only been 30 of these. And right now, we have three of them in the NBA. Right now, you got Karl Towns, Jalen Brunson, course in New York, and then you got Dame and Giannis over in Milwaukee, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown in Boston. So we've got some scoring duos, elite scoring duos in the league right now, but I'm going to go ahead and say that this Knicks scoring duo is the best scoring duo they've ever had in their franchise, and here's why. Jalen Brunson, Dan, is shooting 53% on twos, shooting 41% on threes, and 85% on free throws, giving him a true shooting percentage of 61%. True shooting percentage, for those who don't know, is your field goal percentage when it's weighted for threes and free throws. So a guy who's taking a lot of threes and shooting efficiently on them, they're probably going to get a little short shrift at the field goal percentage. And also, if you get to the free throw line a lot and you make a lot of those freebies, you probably wish it was incorporated in a field goal percentage. So that's what true shooting percentage is, 61%. It's the equivalent of him shooting 61% on twos. Karl-Anthony Towns, Dan, is shooting 56% on twos, 45% on threes, and 86% on free throws, giving him a 64.5 true shooting percentage. Combining those two guys, they have a true shooting percentage of 62.9%. Call it 63%. That's insane. Of the 30 duos that I mentioned earlier, the 30 duos that are scoring 25 each, they are fourth in efficiency, shot efficiency, of all those 30 duos. The only three pairings that have been more efficient than those guys, you might remember Steph Curry and Kevin Durant when they were playing together. They have two of them.
Heard of them.
And then, I don't know if you've heard of these guys, Larry Bird and Kevin McHale, Boston, 1987.
Heard of them. Wow. So far, the combination of scoring volume and scoring efficiency that Jalen Brunson and Karl-Anthony Towns putting up, it's Stephen KD and Bird and McHale, and that's it?
That's it. Those are the only duos that have a more efficient 25-plus than what we're seeing with them. And even if you adjust for scoring era, they're right up there with the most efficient scoring duos with this kind of volume in NBA history. So I know Knicks fans are probably wondering, is this better than Melo and Amare? Is this better than even Julius Randle and and Jalen Brunson last year that scored more combined, but they didn't do it this efficiently. And of course, this is the fourth highest scoring for a duo in Knicks history, but this pairing, Kat and Jalen Brunson, blow them out of the water in efficiency and how well they are when they get those shots up. They don't hold a candle to this duo currently. So you look at Richie Guerin in 1962,
of course,
and Willie Nahls. They had the highest combined scoring average. Basically, everybody had their scoring on steroids in 1962. That was when a lot of scoring records and a lot of triple doubles were happening across the league.
I think technically but it might have been scoring on amphetamines, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. They were taking some sort of pills in terms of the scoring
right.
that year.
The ball was orange and the pills were green. That's right. Yeah.
Right. If you do look at the true shooting percentage of the, you know, Karl Anthony Towns, Jalen Brunson, Knicks, they are 63% true shooting percentage. And that duo in 1962 was at 49%, just to give you perspective. This is the best offense in the NBA right now. They have this scoring duo that is elite among the elite. I think it's the best scoring duo in Knicks history. The bar might be not as high in the Knicks history as they are in other organizations like the Warriors and the Celtics, et cetera, et cetera. But Dan, you're a guy who knows the New York Knicks lore and the history, the Mecca, the MSG, all of that. Is this the best scoring duo in Knicks history, in your opinion?
It's weird to say this because the Knicks are simultaneously a franchise that does have legitimate great history. And then there's also just so much not. There's such a wide like chasm of years of not. When you brought up this idea, I did some quick looking. There are only 25 players in Knicks history who've ever scored 20 points a game in a season. Like, it feels like it should be more than that, given how many years the Knicks have been playing NBA basketball, but that's all there is. And I think back to my youth and growing up in the 80s and 90s in New York, if that's Patrick Ewing, right? So I'm like, surely somebody else scored 20 a game with Patrick Ewing. And the answer to that is incorrect. When Patrick Ewing was averaging, like the couple of years that he averaged over 25 points a game, it was Charles Oakley, 15 points a game, Gerald Wilkins, 14 points a game, Kiki Vandeweghe, 16 points a game. Respectable players all for very many reasons, including many that I just don't want to get choked by Charles Oakley. So I'm going to say no shade or slander on his name whatsoever. But in terms of scoring, yeah, you don't think of those guys as high volume scorers. The scoring pair that I think about with the Knicks of that era, a little bit later, is Allen Houston and Latrell Sprewell, right? It's like they were two mm-hmm. guards, two slashers, two shooters. Latrell Sprewell never scored 20 points a game in a season. He never averaged 20 for a full season, which seems nuts because I remember him. I feel like the way I remember him driving and dunking would lead to more points than this, but it wasn't. The Knicks have hardly ever had teams that featured multiple high volume and high efficiency scores. They're so much more frequently built on defense, the successful Knicks teams throughout the Pat Riley era, the Jeff Van Gundy era, even like quiet as it's kept, the Mike D'Antoni team that went to the playoffs. It was built on Tyson Chandler being Defensive Player of the Year. They have so rarely been an offensively focused team. And yet right now, as you mentioned, it's that battery of Brunson and Towns together is fueling what is not only the number one offense in the NBA this season, but one of the most efficient offenses we've ever seen adjusted for era. And that is a big kind of tone shift for the way Knicks basketball typically goes. But so far, it's been awfully successful in a way that doesn't feel to me, and maybe you tell me if you're feeling differently, doesn't feel like overcooked right now. Doesn't feel like they're running super duper overly hot. It feels a little bit more like this is like form following function in how they built this team.
I know that like the Melo Amare, the nostalgia of that era, you know, right when LeBron James and Dwayne Wade linked up and the whole idea of like Stoudemire and Melo and that era with Woody, it feels like that in the minds of Knicks fans might be held on a pedestal just because of what Melo meant to the Knicks and how they kind of rejuvenated the franchise. But if you look at the numbers, I'm not putting feeling into this, but like those two guys, when they shot, when they scored, you know, over 50 points a game combined, they were taking a lot more shots to get there, a lot more wasted right. possessions. And yeah, that part of that is the era. And like, this is the hyper efficiency era where everything is just like super tailor made to squeeze out as much points in every possession as possible. And that might not have been the case, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago. But the way that these guys are like mastered the pick and roll, the way that they've figured out each other's talents, it seems like they've been playing together for years. And the fact that they're already doing this in the first 20 games of playing together, I'm willing to put them right at the top of that leaderboard in terms of the best scoring duos in Knicks history. So I'm going to go there. I'm putting it past John Starks, and of course, Patrick Ewing, Allen Houston and Patrick Ewing. It was not long ago, Dan, that we had Emmanuel Mudiay and Tim Hardaway Jr. leading in scoring for the Knicks. That was in 2019, bro. Like, that was 6 years ago.
Is that what started the pandemic? Is that like what led to the downfall of society as we know it?
Patient Zero was the basketball being played in Madison Square Garden 5 years ago.
I remember it well. I remember it all too well. Yeah, this is different. This is a lot different. And it's interesting that the way you frame it, like, you know, talking about those, the teams that needed, or the, where the star players needed a lot more shots to generate the same points. So the general framework of the offense was not optimized for point production efficiency. That was even true to a certain extent of the Knicks as recently as last year, right? Like the whole kind of conceit of the Cat trade of moving on from Julius Randle and Dante DiVincenzo and bringing in Karl Anthony Towns was, this was a really good offense, you know, top five offense in terms of points scored per possession. But the way it needed to get there was hammering offensive glass. It was winning the possession battle. It was like the margins stuff that wasn't just, we're going to line up in ways that you can't defend and shoot better than you. Like the ways that Boston could, the way that the best offenses in the league have typically been able to do. The Knicks were kind of coming at it from a side angle, and this year they're hitting it head on. And it is, what you are seeing is like, there are downsides and there are things to be concerned about why they made this trade. This is why they made this trade, to look like this. And through 21 games, where they're 13-8 after blowing out the Magic in the NBA Cup group stage finale, this is why they went out and did this. They said, if we want to get to the highest level, we have to reorganize in this way. And reorganizing around two guys who can shoot, score 25 in this level of efficiency, it's a pretty tantalizing way to reframe things. And it certainly seems to be working out for them so far.
A tantalizing tandem. Karl Anthony Towns and Jalen Brunson. We're going to go deep in on that duo, as well as just how the Knicks are doing this, not just offensively. We're going to look at the defense. And after the break, Dan, we're going to do four little numbers. You're going to give me the numbers, and we're going to talk more about the greatest scoring duo in Knicks history and the number one offense in the NBA right after the break. All right, Dan, what's the first little number in your four-pack here?
1.314. It's clearly a very little number because it's only a one and then it's got a decimal point. What do you think that 1.314 is? Tom, I'm going to stop you right there. It's how many points per possession the Knicks are scoring on plays that feature a Jalen Brunson, Karl Anthony Towns pick and roll. This according to Second Spectrum's player tracking data. I did some reporting for this, Tom. I got a source to give me the info. That means it's not just the possessions that end with go directly to a shot where like Brunson is shooting or Kat's shooting out of the pick and pop. It's just any possession where the Knicks run that two-man action and then play out of it. And that is a monster number.
What you're saying is 1.3 points per possession or points per play when they run a Kat, Jalen Brunson pick and roll. It's not just that pick and roll efficiency. It's the entire play that happens after that too.
Yeah. And you can sort of see it in your mind's eye, right? You know, the Knicks have the floor space. They run the Cat Brunson pick and roll up top. you know, dribble penetration kick out to OG Anunoby in the corner, or hit Josh Hart on a slot cut, or, you know, the ball moves around. Any possession that features that action, the Knicks are scoring 1.3 points per possession out of that. And their Knicks are using it a ton. The volume of that has picked up as the season has gone on. It is the third most frequent pick and roll pairing in the league this season. And it is the second highest efficiency of any pairing. The only one higher than it so far is Murray and Jokic. And like, if you're in that conversation, you're in the right neighborhood in terms of generating efficient NBA offense. So I'm wondering, when you look at the way that they're using that action, they use it a ton against the Magic. They've been stepping it up more. In terms of the way that they can attack and what Towns brings as a counterpoint to what Julius Randle brought, what are you seeing in terms of the way that has changed the Knicks' attack?
The pick and pop, man. Like, it is so deadly when you have a guy who can space the floor like Steph Curry. Like, watching defenses try to navigate Jalen Brunson's kind of slithering around a screen and getting into the paint while also having to figure out, am I going to go guard that guy 25 feet away from the basket because he is going to shoot lights out? That is such a hard predicament, a pick your poison for any defense going against the Knicks. Here's some numbers on that from according to Synergy. The Knicks are scoring 1.36 points on his pick and pops, Karl-Anthony Towns. 1.33 on rolls. So 1.36 on pick and pops and 1.36 on rolls. That, my friends, is pick your poison. Like, you don't know how to defend Jalen Brunson in the first place, but then you throw in this guy who's shooting basically 48% this season on catch and shoots. It is not a layup. That is a 75% shot, in, you know, according to the math there. 75% if you're going to be shooting that lights out from beyond the arc. So when you're doing that, it presents a whole new package of problems for the defense rather than Julius Randle. This team was not oriented around the Jalen Brunson, Julius Randle pick and roll. Julius Randle last year, in 46 games, he had 31 points as the role man for the New York Knicks. Karl-Anthony Towns eclipsed that number in just 7 games this year. It took 7 games to surpass the pick and roll man scoring output that Julius Randle had last season. He got hurt in 46 games. He had 31 points, and Kat already has over 100 of these points in the pick and roll. So I think when you're trying to defend this, it's no longer, okay, I can let Julius Randle get the ball here. It's not going to really kill me. You can't make that same choice when Karl-Anthony Towns is slinging it at 50% from beyond the arc.
And some of that too, you mentioned the roll pop kind of, it's not a disparity in terms of the outcome, but in terms of Towns' decisiveness there, it would make some sense that it takes him a little bit of time to learn a new partner in that dance after, you know, they had never played together before. And also, he's going from last couple seasons, he's moved off the ball more, so he's spotting up more. He's not going to roll right into Rudy Gobert, right? Because Rudy Gobert is going to be in the paint no matter what. So he's going to pop way more often. Towns is now, like, he's not floating off those picks. He's going right to the rim, hard dives, or he's getting out of there and getting space. And like that, the accordion, the way it shrinks and then expands back out is so, so tough to deal with in the half court. And perhaps as it was not coincidentally, it brings us to our second number, 109.4. That is the Knicks' offensive rating in half court possessions when Jalen Brunson and Karl Towns are on the floor together. 109.4, this is according to Cleaning the Glass and their half court scoring efficiency numbers. That is a level of half court scoring efficiency that would have led the NBA in every season in Cleaning the Glass's database. Goes back to 2003.
Wow.
There is not a single year, not the Steph KD years, not the Celtics last year, not the Harden Rockets. None of those teams have scored in the half court as efficiently as the Knicks are doing right now when you've got those two guys on the court. And so I think the question, it's also going back to that, here's why the Knicks did this. Last year, 98.3 points per 100 in the half court, middle of the pack. This year, they are neck and neck with Boston and Cleveland, right at the top of the league in that. So structurally, I think that's where you see a lot of that, the impact that Towns has, just putting defenses in really really compromised positions and making them make choices that are going to hurt them no matter what.
One number that stood out to me in this hot half-court offense that you just described, when you look at their rim efficiency, like they're shooting at the rim, it's 12th this season, and last year they were bottom five.
Yeah.
Like, the spacing that Kat and OG and Mikal Bridges and Josh Hart, when they're playing this five-out system, when they run a high pick and roll with Jalen Brunson, there's nobody at the low man to defend the rim. And you got Jalen Brunson, who's as good as anybody on that little floater. As soon as someone rotates over, most guys, when they come off that pick and roll and they kind of slalom their way into the paint, they might go at the rim and try to draw contact. Jalen Brunson is shooting about 50% on those floaters in the lane. And a lot of that is just he's so good with his footwork and the timing of it all. But also, there's nobody there. Oftentimes, Josh Hart is getting a look at the rim, or Karl Towns is getting a look at the rim, because he's the five man. There's no Isaiah Hartenstein there, or Mitchell Robinson, or Julius Randle that's kind of clogging up the paint. And so a lot of those looks that they're getting in the half court is freed open by that spacing that Karl Towns provides. So it's easier to score points in the half court when you have that five out system and you have a guy like Jalen Brunson that just penetrates and kicks and finds those little tiny spaces in the defense, those seams, and then breaks everything open. You put a pick and pop, a stretch five out there with that, it's almost impossible to guard.
Little number pop quiz, hot shot. What is Josh Hart shooting on two-pointers this season?
Oh, man, I'll go 62%. I'm just going
71.7% on two-pointers for exactly the reason you are talking about. They're guarding him with centers. They're trying to hedge off him to be able to put wings on Towns, to put more size and more attention, sending two at the pick and rolls, three an extra defender. And Hart is just eating. He's cutting. Mm. He's hitting the glass. He is finishing at an incredible rate on the interior. One of the highest rates in the league, despite being, you know, whatever, all is 6'4", 6'5". Truly, truly wild stuff. And a lot of it, as you said, is just the way that they can space it in the half court there. Another aspect of it with the spacing that they're creating, our third number, 70.8. How many points per game the Knicks are creating via assist this season, according to Second Spectrum tracking? That is ninth in the NBA. Last season, 63.1 points per game, 28th in the NBA. So, and that pattern holds largely. If it's not just about like they've played fewer minutes or whatever, or it's like if you look at the assist rate, they're assisting on 64% of their buckets this season. It was 59 last season. So they're from the bottom of the league up toward the middle of the pack or towards the top 10. Despite only throwing like an extra pass or pass and a half a game, it's just that they're so much more productive and efficient. And I'm wondering, like, when you, like, just as a general, if I'm a layman, I'm looking at this, what does that kind of jump up in assist point creation and assist rate tell us about the functioning of the offense?
I think a lot of it has to do with getting Julius Randle and his, not a black hole, it's not like he never passed the ball, but the offense is moving a lot more and the ball is humming a lot more. And Josh Hart, he's averaging 5.7 assists per game this year. Like, the guy is a pseudo point guard for them a lot of ways, picking up the slack from Dante DiVincenzo and Julius Randle. And they're moving the ball a lot better and they're cutting a ton. And so, again, we keep hitting on this, but what a spacing five does is it creates a lot of, you know, ability to do these ghost cuts, backdoor cuts, and just go at the rim a lot more. And that's really what, you know, when you look at a Jokic-led offense, it's not totally different than what you're seeing with the New York Knicks this year and how they're feeding each other and making these cuts to the rim. And so I just think when you get a guy who the ball sticks a lot with Julius Randle and you remove him from the equation, it's much better basketball and it's much more fun to play with.
You're seeing it too. There's even opportunities for growth, like as the Knicks are learning how to play off of Kat. Like if Kat's got the ball at the elbow or, you know, high post, and they're back cutting off of that because the floor is inverted a little bit, you've got that spacing underneath. they're still like the two-man sort of DHO game with him and Brunson. They're still figuring that out. There's some a couple of times, I think, against the Magic where Cat tried to kind of drop it over the top and Brunson just wasn't ready for it. So there's even like they're leaving some money on the table even while having this, you know, the league-leading offense. And a huge beneficiary of that, by the way, has been OG Anunoby, who has been just like rampaging through that open space, finding like a mismatch against a smaller defender, parking him under the basket, basket cutting, shooting the lights out, like a third option in this structure. He's been absolutely lights out in that way.
I mean, when we got that trade last year, and I say we, I'm just saying when we got to see the Knicks with OG Anunoby, he went on this like plus minus just rampage where it was like 25 straight games where he had a plus minus in the positive column, meaning when he was on the floor, the Knicks outscored the opponent every time he was on the floor. And like, they've got some injuries this year at the backup center slot, of course, with Mitchell Robinson and Precious Achiuwa. And you would think that like OG wouldn't be able to have these sort of impacts. He's just expanding his game in ways that like, you know, I think Tom Thibodeau deserves a lot of credit in that they're able to move Dante DiVincenzo and Julius Randle, two core pieces of their offense, and constructing an offense where he's going to empower OG Anunoby, and he's going to have nights where he drops 40, right? And it's just, I think when you look at the Knicks, there are so many ways to kind of amplify other people's skills and their ability to shoot. Just so much of the offense makes sense. They know where the shooters are, right? They have this almost like chemistry, even though they bring in Karl Towns, which is a huge force that's going to change things offensively. It just seems like, I don't know, that this is pretty turnkey. And OG Anunoby has been excellent and a guy that like in his last several games, plus 21, plus 32, plus 21, plus 20, plus 22. It's insane. The way he just does it on both ends of the floor, I don't think gets enough credit nationally.
So you mentioned both ends of the floor, and we're going to finish up our little number series here with the other end of the floor. And maybe in a way that might surprise us, or you know, we'll see where the conversation goes. The fourth little number is 11, as in 11th. That is the Knicks' ranking in defensive efficiency over the last 20 games. Now, you might note doing a quick math, they've played 21 games. And so the Knicks' full season defensive rating is 20th, because that's how badly the Celtics beat the brakes off them on opening night, where they hit 29 threes and sent the Knicks into the depths of hell in terms of they're still digging out their defensive full season rankings from there. But since that point, near top 10 defense, even with the ups and downs and learning new pieces and injuries, as you mentioned, no Mitchell Robinson, no Precious Achiuwa, et cetera, et cetera. How big a concern is the Knicks defense in your eyes right now? Or does this look have the look of a team as you see it, where they could find some of that balance and put themselves into maybe an elite conversation?
There's been a lot of talk, Dan, of Karl-Anthony Towns and the field goal percentage allowed in the rim and the Knicks, yes, you know, paint presence. I think a lot of it has to do with Karl-Anthony Towns making a lot of business decisions. Like, he's a dude that they don't have a backup. And I know their backups have done an admirable job of filling in without Mitchell Robinson and Precious Achiuwa. But I feel like Karl-Anthony Towns knows how vital he is and knows the rap on him is that he's going to make these stupid, dumb fouls that is always going to put him in foul trouble. And I do think a lot of this is going to be solved if they just get a competent, a really solid backup center when Mitchell Robinson comes back, that I think you're going to see Karl Towns be a little bit more aggressive or at least provide more muscle or a little bit of pressure at the rim, protection at the rim than he has been previously. Because like we do look at those numbers and say, all right, they're 11th. They're just around the top 10 if you exclude that Boston game opening night. I'll also point out that he's only fouled out. Karl Towns has only fouled out once in 20 games that he's played.
Wow. It has felt
I thought
like
that
more
number
than
would be way higher. Way higher this season. With the injuries that they've had behind him, I thought he would be fouling out all the time because teams would be wanting to do it. He's got a big target on his back to basically foul that dude out because they got nobody behind him, essentially. And yet he's only fouled out once in 20 games. Last year, he had 7 foul outs, DQs, in 62 games. So over 10% of his games, he was fouling out last year. And we'll see in the playoffs how that number, fluctuates with the ability, just all the scouting reports on Cat in, defensively. I think a lot of this will be solved by a trade or making a move to get a more dependable, backup center. Whether, I'm just off the top of my head, what would Steven Adams look like on this team? Clint Capela, if they're going to go the Okongwu route and just say, like, look, let's get something for this expiring contract. And Clint Capela, who knows what the Atlanta Hawks are at this point? We'll see in the NBA Cup. They might just win the whole thing. Kevon Looney over in Golden State. Trayce Jackson-Davis has been doing a really nice job of filling in and basically being the starting center. And maybe they make some moves here, and then Kevon Looney becomes, an expendable player on that roster. Like Loon Dog over in the Knicks, it feels like feels inevitable, something like that. So, like, I think the defense will get better as soon as, Mitchell Robinson comes back, if he comes back. And if he doesn't, I do think that they would be it would be a smart move for them to beef up that front line.
Well, the more that they can do to bolster the front line, the back line of the defense, and the bolster the front court and give themselves some, a little bit tougher rim protection, would only serve to benefit a team that's been so heavily built on its offense. But if they keep getting 50.3 of the of points per game out of their top two guys, and then everybody else keeps shooting lights out around them, they might not need to be awesome on defense. They just might need to be good enough, because that offense looks like it's going to be good enough to give a lot of defenses problems heading down the rest of the season.
We have to either take credit or make an apology to LeBron James here in a minute. In our last segment, we're going to go through our over-unders and our previous big number a few weeks ago about LeBron James right after the break. Dan, I hear footsteps.
Oh, no. Tom, who's approaching?
It's my man, your man, Dan Devine. You are closing the gap here on the over-unders this season.
Oh, is that the case, Mr. Haberstroh?
Yeah. I had a pretty sizable lead in the over-unders a few weeks ago, and right now the scoreboard is 10 me, 9 you. And it really is, the margins are even slimmer than that, because Isaiah Hartenstein has taken 2 three-pointers, which means that his over-under that we set at 0.4 is exactly 0.4 threes per 36 minutes. So that, depending on what happens, there is some like real chance that this week you could be just blowing me out of the water, because you took the over, I took the under on that. It can flip right there. This entire thing could pivot right there.
I mean, a nation waits with bated breath to find out when Isaiah Hartenstein is going to hoist his next three. By the way, I shouldn't, at this point in my career, I shouldn't be looking at comments anymore. I looked at the comments on one of the YouTube videos, and somebody said it looked like you were doing a podcast with Isaiah Hartenstein. So I think what they mean is that I look like Isaiah Hartenstein, which I'm not here to say, is that right? Is that not right? I'm here to say that guy looks like $87 million. So thank you so much. I will take it. I am not going to argue.
Does that make me Alex Caruso?
Well, now I feel like we've got a dynamic that we have to pursue. Yes, headband needs to come. Yeah, we're going to need to figure that out. There's a lot to play with there. A lot to enjoy.
Yeah, we've got, you've got 9, I've got 10. Last week we did the Celtics. You took the over on three-pointers per game. They've already increased it to 50.9. So you've got that. Jaylen Brown, we both took the over on 33.3% three-point field goal percentage, and he's hitting the over now. And Derek White, bless him, and thanks. If you want to, do you want to give his dad a shout out real quick and a thank you on the pod?
Yes, of course. Mr. Richard White, father of Derek White, not only listened to the show and where we talked about his son and talked about the Celtics, and we shouted him out, he thanked us for the shout out and then complimented the big number as, stats in perspective. What more do you need? I think it's, recommendations, testimonials. These are all good things. I guess what we could say is, Mr. White, if you could just slide us that 5-star review, we could use that. Mm. That would be good. But beyond that, we certainly welcome you aboard, and we're happy to have you. And we're also happy that we continue to put fuel in the tank of your son, whose season continues to go bananas.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like we need to use that as basically our motto, or, you know, the tagline for this podcast. What more could you want? Stats and perspective. Look, you talk about Derek White's father.
I do often.
I was trying to do a segue here. we're both fathers, and it seems we deserve to take some credit here, or blame. Not really sure where we are on this side of the ledger. LeBron James has decided to go through the coldest shooting slump of his career. And I don't mean cold in like a cool way. I mean, like, he's 0 for 19 in his previous four games. That's the largest number of attempts in a four-game sample without making a three in his entire NBA career. That is right after we declared, or at least I pitched it as the most impressive season of his career, because he was shooting 42% from three. And since then, it seems he has forgotten how to shoot a three-pointer. And now everything seems to be unraveling in Lakerland. And Dan, how much credit are you taking here at the big number?
Well, your name's on the show. Like, it's really up to you. I would say I will take...
Wait, if he was shooting 60%, would you be saying that?
No, of course. I would be taking the credit for that. Of course. I would say, like, yeah, we were on the front end of a peak, and we were identifying something special that was happening. And we've talked about this before, I have brought this kind of curse with me across jobs, across platforms, all sorts of ways. Wherever when I notice something or write about it, or when we talk about something on a show, look out below. The other foot is about to drop, and the other foot has like stomped straight through the floor into the apartment below me. Hi, Dana. And it has been ugly for LeBron James. But I guess in terms of the blame credit matrix, I guess we could say we will accept some of the blame from LeBron and Lakers fans. But if Father Time wants to give us some credit for like helping him catch up, maybe it's like, it's sort of like J.R. Smith getting in Iguodala's way so that LeBron could catch up and pin the shot against the backboard. Maybe that's it. We're sort of the J.R. Smith in this analogy, is what I'm saying.
Look, man, I love the fans that have been hitting us up being like, you guys ruined LeBron, and like, are you going to talk about the fact that he's shooting blah, 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 like 10% since you guys did your pod? I would like to believe that we have that kind of influence on LeBron James. You know, like, they're giving us way too much credit that we are now cursing LeBron James, or we are ruining LeBron James. I think, look, I cover the Blazers on their broadcast every night, and for like 15 games, Denny Avdia could not hit a three-pointer. And now he's like the best three-point shooter in the NBA. LeBron James was shooting 42%, and then now he's shooting quite literally 0% over his last four games. I don't think this is it. I don't think he's done. I don't think this is like he's forgotten how to shoot the three ball. He's gone through periods like this before. I think in 2016, he shot 0 for 15 over a four-game stretch from downtown, and they won a championship that year. So maybe this is it, because Father Time comes for us all. But I think maybe I should lean into this, that we are the reason why LeBron James has suddenly forgotten how to shoot threes, because we did a podcast about it. But you know what? Dan, you've got to make up that one hit on the over-unders, that deficit. We're going to do three more here real quick. I'm going to go three Knicks stories for this over-under. The first one I'll do is just pretty simple. The big number this week is 50.3. Do you think that Karl Towns and Jalen Brunson are going to maintain their 50 points per game combined average going forward? Yes or no? Are you going to take the over on 50 or under?
I'm going to take the under on 50B just because I while I said earlier, this does not seem like the Knicks offense operating on the whole doesn't seem like they're running overly hot. Karl Towns is shooting. I mean, and Karl Towns is an elite shooter, but it would not shock me if the catch and shoots got down from like 48 to 45, right? Or like if some of the drives that he's finishing through traffic wind up rimming out a little bit, if he gets to the line a little bit less frequently, if that drops down to, you know, 24 and 24 or 25 and 24, it gets me under. I could see it dipping off a little bit, but maybe some of those shots or some of those touches get redistributed a little bit and the overall function of the offense continues humming. So I'm going to go under. And what say you?
I'm taking the over. Here's why. Those five guys, Mikal Bridges, Josh Hart, OG Anunoby, Jalen Brunson, Karl-Anthony Towns, have played 104 of a possible 105 games this year. They've been remarkably healthy. And one way, we saw it last year in the playoffs with Jalen Brunson, where he averaged a zillion points a game, it's because they had nobody else. Guys were dropping like flies. And I kind of feel like at some point, Jalen Brunson is going to be asked to score or shoot more than he has so far this season. And Karl-Anthony Towns, the same way. Like if Josh Hart or OG had to miss any sort of time, or Mikal Bridges, God forbid, he misses a single game for the rest of the, you know, his entire career. He's never done this before. But a lot of that slack would have to be picked up by Karl or Jalen Brunson. I'm taking the over on 50 combined scoring average. Next one. Their offensive rating right now is number one in the NBA. Do you think they're going to stay in that neighborhood? Top three, I'm going to set the over-under on the New York Knicks eventual offensive rating rank. I'm going to take the under. I think they will finish top three. What say you?
I'm going to go with you on that because I think it's going to be them and the Celtics, and I mean, right now it's the Cavs, the Thunder, once they sort of get hot and get everybody going. They were off to a chillier offensive start, but they've started to pick it up. I think you're going to see those teams kind of all vying. Dallas, you know, with the way that Luka and Kyrie have been performing. But I think that, like, there's a clear gap right now, at least, New York, Boston, Cleveland. Those are the teams that have really, like, all of those teams are up over 1.2 points per possession. Everybody else still sort of significantly below that. So I think, wait, no, which one of those winds up one, two, or three? I don't know. But I think that barring an injury, that they're going to stay in that sort of ballpark. So, I mean, again, the Knicks were a top three, top five, top seven offense without Towns the last couple of years. And then they've dramatically retrofitted everything. I like it. I like the way it functions. I think it makes a ton of sense. I'm going under. I think it's going to be one, two, or three.
Especially if Tyler Kolek decides he wants to get 40 minutes a night. I love that guy. next one, Karl-Anthony Towns, fouling out percentage. Mentioned it earlier, he's got one in 20 games this season, 5%. I'm going to put the foul out percentage at 10%. Last year, it was at 11% with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Okay, it's at 5% right now. The over-under's at 10%. I think it's going to be higher. I think it's going to be higher. I'm going to take the over on 10% Karl-Anthony Towns, his foul out percentage in games that he's played. What say you?
I don't have a good take for this. I'm just going to say under because I got to go opposite of you on some things to be able to game theory this and kind of make up the ground. So footsteps, you're hearing them. Objects in the rearview mirror, closer they appear. Karl-Anthony Towns is going to learn at whatever age he is now to defend without his hands, and we're gonna stay on the court, and we're not gonna foul out. That's what we're not gonna do, and we're gonna make up ground on Tom Haberstroh as a result of it.
Just like we have influence over LeBron James, I'm wondering how much influence we can have on the referees, you know, here.
By the way, LeBron, if we have that influence, can I hold like a mill just for a little, like the holidays, everybody could use this slide. Like, let me know. You know,
he's not going to get that number. NBA cup bonus. It's not going to happen this year.
That's
so
a good point.
Don't hold your breath, Dan, if you were holding your breath on LeBron giving you
damn
a fat check this year.
Damn. Well, okay. It was worth a shot. You know, maybe if I don't connect on that shot, I mean, it just puts me in the company of LeBron James not connecting on another three-pointer for the entire rest of the season. There we go.
Hey, everybody. That was our show today. Dan, thank you so much. I'm glad to hear that you had a great Thanksgiving. We're going to head into the Christmas, the holiday spirit here coming up in a few weeks. The NBA Cup is around the corner. The quarterfinals are here. I'm loving it. I just think that the NBA Cup's a good idea for raising the stakes in the regular season. I'm really excited for that. That is going to do it for this week's episode of The Big Number. Thanks to Emmy for producing this episode, as well as John behind the scenes and the entire team doing what they do to make this the show that it is. So thank you so much. Please watch The Big Number on YouTube. This is not just a podcast. This is a show that you can watch on YouTube. Please subscribe to The Big Number wherever you get your podcast. Give us a 5-star review and tell your friends at all these cocktail parties and holiday parties. Go watch, go listen to The Big Number, just like Richard White. Until then.